Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. And welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Sunday this month, we speak to one candidate running for local or state office. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
As I mentioned earlier, it is not Sunday. It is Monday afternoon. We are preempting the Monday afternoon roundtable. I'm Jeff Leonard, General Manager, 94.7 WPVC.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
Today we're co-hosting a WPVC election special one-hour interview with candidates for the Albemarle Board of Supervisors. Keep in mind, we do not, as WPVC, endorse any political candidate for office. We provide this information to you, our listeners, to help you make the best choice.
And with us in the studio this afternoon is Ann Malik, Democratic candidate for Albemarle Supervisor from the Whitehall District. Ann, welcome to WPVC.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Ann, let's start with just a little information about your history. Where were you born and what was your life like as you were growing up?
I was born here in Albemarle in 1950 and had a rural childhood, a very idyllic play in the mud, play with animals growing up, old-fashioned childhood.
And what kind of education did that childhood lead into, and what work background do you have, and how has it helped you serve as a member of the Board of Supervisors?
Well, I graduated from Albemarle High School in 1967 and went north to college, to Connecticut College in New London, Connecticut, and that began my exposure to small New England town government and also what urban living was like. My one urban experience was in Boston, where I lived from 71 to 73 when my husband Leo was in graduate school at dental school there at Tufts. And then we moved to Amherst, Mass., where we lived for 9 years. The town was 9,000 people with plus the students at UMass Amherst Hampshire colleges. So it was a five-college community there. And at that time, I learned about town meeting and what a wonderful situation it is to be in a small New England town where you have such close relationship with your local government decisions. Of those 9,000 local residents, 235 of us were elected to town meeting. We met twice a year for as many nights as it took to answer all the questions which were placed by citizens on the warrant, it was called. If you had 100 signatures, you could get your question on the warrant for town meeting. All across the range of interests, what should we do about various topics? And the last one in which I participated went for 11 nights. And we got 110 items done on the warrant, some giant size issues like building new roads for millions of dollars, and others very small and parochial, but also very important to the people who had placed them on the list.
It's fascinating. Here in Charlottesville and Auburn, you just got to sign up, and you just go up there and say whatever you want.
Well, that's absolutely right. And the reason that history is important to me is that when I became a member of the Board of Supervisors in 2008, I really wanted to bring more of that home rule atmosphere into our local process here, so I began having town hall meetings. My colleagues at the time thought that was dumb and told me, well, they elected you to make these decisions. What are you doing this for? Nobody's going to come.
If we wanted to hear from them, we would have invited them.
And so the first meeting at the Whitehall Community Building, 110 people showed up.
Really?
They came, many with grievances that had been burning them for many years, about which I had not been involved, but they still had a chance to share. Some of them got pretty agitated. One fellow I've known for years said, now listen here, nobody else has come out here to talk to us, so let's be nice to her. That was the first thing. And second of all, I've known her since she was a baby, so you will be nice to her. And everybody was very, not cordial, but certainly civil, and has always been. Despite whatever disagreements we may have, people have always been very able to have conversations at my town hall meetings, and I've had 66 of them in the 12 years that I've been here.
Now, and you're serving on the Board of Supervisors from the Whitehall District, and you know that your decisions affect everyone in Albemarle, but what areas does the Whitehall District cover?
So the Whitehall District is the western part of the county, and I liken it to a big banana because of that arc shape. It goes from Greene County to Nelson County, and everything on the western border is the Shenandoah National Park, so from the foothills right up into the mountains.
So Greenwood and all down through there?
Greenwood, yes.
Oh, wow.
The Meacham's River is the eastern border for most of its length,
okay.
But a little bit, the old Yellow Mountain Precinct from 250 south to Batesville,
wow,
used to be in the Whitehall District, and that was transferred after 2010 census to the Samuel Miller District because the population in Crozet had grown so quickly in the 2008 to 2010 pattern period that the geography had to shrink in order to keep each of the districts about 16,000 people.
The only growth center or major population is Crozet.
Crozet is the growth area segment for the Whitehall District, and a very important one, yes.
Sure it is. We don't get to Crozet very much. It's kind of down in a bowl a little bit out there. It's hard to get your radio signal out there. Running for Board of Supervisors. I'm sorry. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC Election Special Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard, and with us in studio today is Ann Malik. Ann, how have you been active in recent years to help improve Albemarle beyond your role as a supervisor?
One of the most effective things I've been able to do is to make connections throughout the Commonwealth through my training is in the Supervisor Certification Program that's run by the Virginia Association of Counties, or VACO. Leo, my husband, likened it to a master's in public policy because it took about 2 years and was a lot of work. But I learned so much. We had all sorts of focus elements from budget to personnel to planning to risk management, leadership. And the people I met from throughout the Commonwealth helped me to have a better understanding of the wide range of issues all across the state and also how other people had found solutions to the similar types of issues that might be coming our way. I've also been involved at the national and level with committee work on the environment and energy land use committees and with the Arts Commission. The Arts Commission is a new appointment, and I think this is an important learning experience for me to learn how other jurisdictions have involved the arts in their own fostering of community and their success.
Like the city does Art in Place.
That's one of the things that they have invested in.
So the county is now interested in doing stuff
well,
like that?
Well, the Whitehall District for 50 years has been known for its murals. And I don't know, you need to come out and see them.
Because the
oldest ones are under the trestle. And one side talks about early settlers and the other side talks about the Monacans.
Okay.
There's a very well-documented now Monacan site in the Lickenhole Basin where there was actually a settlement. There was a fire and the settlement burned, and then I guess within a couple hundred years of that, the railroad was put in, and the wash water, the ballast that washed from the railroad track, washed down over and covered very carefully successfully the remains of the Monacan settlement. So there's ash and a whole lot of other artifacts there that people were able to discover. So it's part of the story of the county that we want to make sure we're
telling. It's a history and an art.
Yes.
It's excellent. You know, running for supervisors takes a lot of time and energy, and I know at least one of your current supervisors elected not to run again. What was your thought process like when deciding whether to run again or not, and what made you tip that you wanted to do it again?
I'm so inspired by the engagement that the community members in the Whitehall District have for their local government process. It is a community that has descendants of the original settlers from 1820. Their grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren. They're so welcoming to the new residents who have been moving in for the last 50 to 100 years. And they're very strong community organizations, which really engage everyone in the process of what's happening. And also, they're so invested in how the little town of Crozet turns out as it grows up and regrows, actually, because it was, of course, a very bustling manufacturing center in the 50s and 60s and has had a quiet period now, but is entering a period of rebirth as the new downtown is redeveloped and so many new people are moving in. But welcoming those new people into the quality of life that Crozet offers and the Whitehall District as a whole is, I think, really genuine and very, very successful. And that inspired me to keep working to represent them.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's Board of Supervisors Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Ann Malik. And the events of 2017, including Charlottesville City Council's debate and vote on the statues, the July 8th KKK rally, and the Unite the Right rallies on August 11th and 12th, they traumatized our community. Now, back then, one group of white supremacists almost held a rally in Dardantown Park. If some group wanted to hold a potentially violent event in the county, what should the Board of Supervisors do about it?
Well, fortunately, at the time when the North Carolina group wanted to hold their rally at the Dardantown Park, we had rules in place that actually required them to have insurance to cover their activities because of the size of it.
Who's going to underwrite that?
And they did not have time to make those kinds of arrangements, so they were not able to get a permit to hold their activities in the park. The emergency and public safety folks were ready in case they tried anyway to assemble there, but that did not happen. It was peaceful. In the intervening time, the Parks and Rec Department and our legal department have gone over all of those procedures and updated them to make sure that the county has good content-neutral rules for everyone to follow in a case that someone wants to use one of our parks to set out what their requirements are going to be. And I think we are in good stead going forward. So the board would not interfere or have to take an action because we have really strong rules set out now for, and our staff, our police department would work with our county staff.
And they're content-neutral.
Sure. And to have anything survive in court, we know that's incredibly important.
So you have to thread that needle between free speech and public safety.
Exactly. And there are other patrons who use the park all the time. And so choosing one group who would basically want to take over and then evict all of those other patrons who are there was not right either.
I have a follow-up on Darden Towel question. I'm a soccer parent. You guys did a nice job up there. You were putting soccer fields in or something, right?
Well, the fields are being refurbished.
Okay.
And I think that's underway now. I need to go and visit and see how they're coming along.
And some AstroTurf is going in there, too, for year-round training. And we were very excited to get that email.
Well, so. That's grand. I don't know if the work has begun yet, but I know I've raised a lot of questions about making sure they're choosing the safest materials possible.
Now, the events of July and August of 2017, they also uncovered covert racism embedded in our institutions. 2 years have gone by. Where do you think we are now in race relations in Albemarle, and where are we headed?
I think that, in particular, my constituents, my African-American constituents in the neighborhoods throughout the district have gone out of their way to explain to me that they want that these particular individuals think that we should move forward, and the sort of short answer is, the grandma's request, make sure that my grandson and granddaughter have equal access to really great opportunities for school and for jobs and for quality of life. And at the same time, they understand and have been through a lot themselves and understand that our shared history is lacking. There were many things in high school growing up here that I did not have the chance to learn. And we need to do a much better job, all of us at the county and the community at large, to share our histories in the neighborhoods and the churches and make sure that we know where we've been so we can do a better job moving forward.
And the recently released housing needs assessment for Planning District 10 shows that many people in the area struggle to afford a place to live. Many groups in Albemarle are calling for more affordable housing. How do you see the problem of affordable housing in urbanized and rural areas, and what do you think the county should do to increase the availability of affordable housing?
Am I allowed to go back and just cycle back to the last question just for
another
minute? Because
whatever.
You mentioned about the institutions, and I just want to say, too, that in the last year, the county staff and Human Resources Department has done a really thorough study and made sure about our processes to make sure that we're doing the right thing for creating a healthy workplace and focusing on inclusion in our housing, in our training and our hiring processes. And so that's a new focus for our county in the last 2 years that I think is benefiting all applicants, all residents, as we go forward. So jumping back to affordable housing.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Sorry for the disruption.
Thanks for following up. That was great.
So affordable housing is one of the most challenging questions that we will face. I think there are people across the country who are equally bewildered. And the reason I'm bewildered is because there is not a ready solution that is easy to take up. And the reason that this exists is because of the great tension between the wide ability of citizens in the Whitehall District to pay extra costs on their tax bill to help to solve the affordable housing problem. So I have low-income seniors, retirees. There are also young families trying to start out. and they are not able to absorb higher tax rates themselves. Every year at town meeting, and especially in the January town halls, I am told my Social Security went up $20 and your tax bill went up $50, and what am I supposed to do with that? And I don't have a good answer for that question. So we have, because of the tax structure we have, and that so much of our budget is based upon the property taxes instead of other revenue at the moment, that is a real challenge. But there are certainly ways which the county is using to try to improve the situation which we have now. Our current program of workforce housing during when properties came in for rezoning, such as Brook Hill, as you just mentioned a few minutes ago, they are required by their rules at the time to provide 15% of their units in the affordable level. But at the workforce level, which is based upon an income that's 80% of the average median income.
The AMI.
Yeah, the AMI, that's right. And that is a house that costs about $214,000. Which is still absolutely out of reach for grand numbers of our employees who are working and trying to live here while they are close to their jobs. And so what some of the things that the county board has invested in is working with private enterprise to actually build a Brookdale, which is a 96-unit apartment complex. It's on Old Lynchburg, off of Old Lynchburg Road, and it will provide housing for 60% AMI people, workers. And this is the very first project in Albemarle, which is focused on entirely on that income group. So that was a big step forward. And the county board did invest in a tax rebate program to help bridge the gap in the financing that was occurring for that project. We already know, of course, the Treesdale has been open for six or eight years now, I think, and it has a range of 30, 40, 60, 80% AMI housing.
And that's on Rio Road.
And that's on Rio Road.
Penn Park.
Exactly. So we have good experience with private business who actually is helping to carry out this mission. But our biggest effort in the last 12 months has been on the Southwood Mobile Home Park rezoning. And therefore, its subsequent rehabilitation, and Habitat is our partner on that project. 341 units of existing affordable housing were at risk of going to zero. To me, that is an unalterable issue. You cannot look away from that kind of situation. So there was unanimous support on the part of the board that we needed to engage with our staff and try to push this project and help this project come along. It has been very challenging for the Habitat applicants as well as for the county because it's a brand new process. And any time you develop a brand new process, there's a lot of pain involved for everybody. But we have gotten there, and it's broken into phases, with the first phase having a residential component and also a separate commercial component that will be separated off and sold to someone else who's going to develop that.
Have you been inside a lot of those trailers as a probation officer? They needed some refurbishing.
Many of them are terribly dangerous.
They are. They're floor, and no roofs, floors will fall through. So the Orange Dot Report 3.0 yes. states that 14% of families in Albemarle don't have enough or earn enough to meet basic needs, including housing, as we were talking about. These families live in both urbanized and the outer rural areas of the county. How do you see the problem of income levels unable to meet living costs, and is there anything the county can do about that?
The Orange Dot number one in 2015 was like a shot between the eyes for me, because I learned that 454 families in the Whitehall District were working and living in poverty. And that was an astonishing number. And it made me realize that I needed to speed up my evolution and my process to get to a yes on changing our view on economic development and increases in jobs, and especially on career ladder jobs. It will help everybody in the community to be able to support their families better. So many of these workers need new training skills, and that my work with the Workforce Board, both at the local and state level, is helping to make sure that our federal funds are used really well to provide training for new skills, or to get unemployed folks to be able to get the skills they need to get a good job. But I think improving our earning ability for our residents by helping them to get training and better jobs will help with that inability as described in the Orange Dot report for people to feed their families. They're working so hard, and it's wrong.
So it's impressive to me, at least, in the question preceding that about affordable housing, that you can actually look to two tangible experiences where the county actually worked with private enterprise to develop affordable housing. So the boards would be commended for doing that. That's unusual.
And one thing that may not be very clear is that we spend about more than $1 million in the current year budget on the affordable housing category. Once we assembled all the different sections, then it's actually much more than that, because it's more than $400,000 goes to AHIP, who is helping to renovate existing affordable homes and help people to stay in their homes as they age and make the repairs that they can't afford to make themselves. And then the $600,000, which has gone toward the Habitat Project for Southwood, plus the county invested to extend for 30 more years the affordability for the West End apartments there north of Mallside, just down the road.
Oh, yeah. I've been
and
there.
And so these are all elements that are providing support for an extension of existing units, which is absolutely important. We need to do more, and we need to do better policy for eviction prevention and other things. There's a long list of suggestions which has come from a DC study that we hope to work on this spring.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's Board of Supervisors Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Ann Malik. And the release of the 2019 SOL scores show that the achievement gap based on race, ethnicity, and economic disadvantage remains in school divisions in our area, including Albemarle, despite efforts to close the gap. Now, the school board and school superintendent control what the school division does, but students are with their teachers only 30% of the day, and they're with others 70% of the day. Can other departments in county government help the schools close the achievement gap?
Mm-hmm. So I will draw your attention to work that is happening today with the Department of Social Services. They're called family support workers, and they are engaged in all different levels of family counseling for at-risk students and students in crisis as well. And also our Parks Department, I think, having different avenues for after-school engagement and enrichment in addition to what the school departments provide at our work with the Boys and Girls Club are all different ways that these children's experiences can be enriched. When I was an elementary teacher in the summers, I had a science camp for 18 years, and one of the many-year efforts was with the students at Venable. And 10 or so of the summer students at Venable would go to camp with me. And we visited scientists and played in the streams. And they had all these students, in addition to the students from the rest of the community, all different schools, all had very different experiences from anything they had seen before. Going to places where things would explode. And the scientists would say, now everybody put your hands to your sides and do not touch anything because things in here blow up. And their eyes would get really big. But these were wonderful experiences because it enabled everyone in the group to see that there was a whole lot of new world out there. I mean, as I spoke to the providers of these visits, I'd say, I'm looking for the wow factor. No mastery of learning required, just the wow. Because I want them to remember this later on when they're struggling with their work. Many of the research people also said they went out of their way to talk about their own struggles with math or their own struggles in elementary school. And look how it turned out. I'm now studying the brain in fruit flies. And even though I had trouble in math when I was a little boy, I'm doing it now. Those kinds of experiences really help children of all backgrounds to strengthen their interest in learning.
Now, having health care available in a time of need is a necessity for all people in the county. This is especially true for people living in areas far from hospitals. What do you see the county could do to help people receive health care when they need it?
Well, one of our greatest advantages in Albemarle County has been our very strong volunteer fire and rescue system, and in combination with a paid staff at the Albemarle Fire Department. We have over 400 active duty volunteers who are in spread across 9 firehouses and rescue houses in the county, some of which have some paid staff during the day while the volunteers are working normal their other jobs. And these providers are making a wonderful service, both the paid staff and the volunteers, to provide as rapid first response, first of all, and then transport to the hospitals as needed. In many jurisdictions across the Commonwealth and around the country, there is no such thing as a volunteer fire and rescue. And so I think we are very fortunate here in the county to have this wonderful cohort of community-minded people, often generations of people who provide this service to their neighbors out of love and tremendous effort and training to provide this. We're also very lucky to have world-class hospitals right here in town. And even though a 20-minute drive might feel like an eternity when you're in medical distress or emotional distress, there are many, many patients who come from all around the world to have the care that we have right close by.
Now, you mentioned mental distress. Well, having health care available when people need it, yeah, it's a necessity for everybody in the area. Getting care for mental illness is even more of a challenge. There are limits to insurance coverage, and the lack of professionals in the field means that many people with mental health problems, they just go untreated. What should the county do to help people with mental illness?
The current effort is focused on our funding for Region 10, which is the 6-county jurisdiction here and has state and federal funding to supplement what the county puts in. 2 big advancements we have had through the new management at Region 10. First is county funding of 16 critical care beds for people in crisis who would have previously just gone straight to jail. And this provides a short-term treatment for them to get stabilized and have a plan going forward. The other is the long-needed women's center, which just opened this past 6 months, where the women who need treatment can take their children with them up to below 5 years of age so that they don't have that obstacle to treatment. There is no parent I'm aware of who will willingly walk away from their children to get help for themselves. That's just against the nature of parents. And so having these both of these critical resources available has helped our patients in need at the real time of crisis for them. The third is a really strong effort on the part of our police department to provide emergency and mental health awareness training for all of our police officers, and a grand majority of them have already completed the certification. This gives them, the police officers, extra experience in how to de-escalate situations and how to understand the wide variety of presentations of people who are in distress, yeah, and prevent as many of the interactions from going badly as we possibly can.
You're listening to the 94.7 Albemarle County Board of Supervisors Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With in the studio today is Ann Malik. Ann, mental illness leads to our criminal justice system. The superintendent of regional jail has said that 50% of people in jail suffer from some form of mental illness and 80% have substance abuse problems. You've touched on it some, but what changes in our criminal justice system are needed and what can the county do to address them? I understand you're not the prosecutor or the police, but you do lead from the top sometimes.
Well, one of the agencies which I particularly support is the drug court and the alternative sentencing projects, which we've had with great success, where many of our offenders are able to enter a very, very structured program, providing job training and on the job, going to their jobs to be able to continue to support their families instead of being incarcerated, keeping their connections with the community, having frequent meetings with officers and supervision, and a far lower recidivism rate than just being incarcerated and then at the end of their time dumped back out into the same situation, which often got them into jail in the first place.
You know, statistics reveal another issue. With the criminal justice, and that's systemic racism. From police stops to prosecutions to incarcerations, whites have a clear advantage over people of color. This past spring, an African-American family was forced to the ground by gunpoint by Albemarle police officers. What can the county do to make sure that all members of our community can trust that justice is equally administered by our police officers, prosecutors, judges, and prison staff?
Well, we the county and the police department as a whole, are working very hard to make the very best training for our officers available and also to have very high performance standards for all of our officers. And ongoing now is a disproportionate contact study, which is partly with the city of Charlottesville. And I was expecting, I think the report was due out a couple of weeks ago, but the meeting had to be postponed. So I do not have that, what their recommendations were in my hand at the moment. But I was interviewed at the beginning of the process, and they asked me what I wanted to see out of it. And I said, we need to know what the circumstances are and what our statistics show so that we will understand better how improvements should be made and that we can act on those to continue to make progress. The researchers were very grateful for the rapid and complete cooperation of our police department, and I give them credit for that they have been willing to expeditiously provide information to the researchers to make sure that they're getting the best answers they can.
All right, and thanks. We can take a short break. Be right back. And we're back. I'm Jeff Leonard. I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams, 94.7 Election Special Interview. In studio today is Ann Malik, current Board of Supervisors, and candidate for the Whitehall District.
And recent reports from scientists tell us that the climate change crisis is much worse than previously understood. We've got years, not decades, to act. And young people who understand the urgency of this crisis, they're condemning the lack of action by older people who are in positions of power. The depth of this problem just cannot be overstated. What should Albemarle County government do to accelerate the reduction of its own greenhouse gas emissions and encourage residents to do the same?
And there are two parts to that question, three parts actually, that we have to get answers in all three levels. One is adaptation, how we're going to adapt to the global changes. And two is resilience, how are we ever going to deal with the changes as they come? And then the third is preventing it from getting worse as we go along. So we had the LCAP program, the Local Climate Action Program report, which was adopted, signed by Chamber, UVA, City, County, business people, in 2009. Work on it was completely stopped in 2010 when the board changed and had a different perspective. It has been reactivated now, thankfully, within the last 2 years, and we have staff effort bearing down on updating, first of all, the inventory of what our baseline measurements are for Albemarle County, because we didn't have a baseline between now and 2009. So that will help us to know where we are from the last 10 years. And also then how quickly we need to make other changes. At the same time, the county has dramatically invested in weatherization of all of its buildings and to the tune of saving $50,000 per year on the utility costs for the McIntyre office building alone, which to me makes very good financial sense when we can invest and have a return of that sort. Showing as a good example all of the ways that distributive solar power and distributive power generation can work all across the community, whether it's on farms or business rooftops or the roofs of beer delivery trucks. These are all ways that our county support for the Better Business Challenges and our grant efforts have spread this information throughout the community. Happily, in the last year, we now have support through our LEAP program, the Local Energy Alliance program, to actually leverage grants from Dominion and other funding sources to improve the weatherization for much of our poorest energy efficiency housing stock, which is in many of our older neighborhoods, and also is helping our low-income neighbors to be able to have much more money to spend on food and medicine and less on electricity and heating oil as their homes are weatherized and their quality of life will be improved. Having the comfort and safety of homes that have had some weatherization is really, really important. Our AHIP collaboration is also carrying this out in many of our rural houses, which have been behind the energy standard, let's put it that way. Because of their age. and they're getting much more safely habitable now because of the improvements which are made. So there is, over the last 2 years, there's been a much more aggressive move toward engagement at a different level. Instead of just passively showing what we can do, there's now engagement with business community and with residential property owners, people own apartment complexes, things like that, to be able to expand their improvements as well. There's much, much more we can do, and there's a long list of different possibilities to go to next.
Now, nature provides the means to capture and sequester carbon, and it's called forests. Forests also prevent erosion, and they reduce stormwater runoff. What policy should the county strengthen or create to protect and expand areas with trees?
Mm-hmm. The one biggie that's totally within the county's framework is to improve the tree cover requirements for subdivision and redevelopment. And we are actually working with Arlington County at the legislature this coming year to get the authority to be able to increase the requirements for tree cover. This has been brought into clear focus in the last 2 years by residents from Crozet who have watched 50-acre forest after 50-acre forest not be selectively cut to put a house in here and a house over there, but every tree on the property demolished, everything flattened, and then those trees are replaced with a little thing, an inch in diameter, that's supposed to help sometime 20 years or 30 years from now to provide the shade that the old one did. This has been a running argument with me and developers for the last 30 years, and they all laugh in my face and say, oh, it's so much faster just to knock them all down. We're going to kill them all anyway. But they don't have to. And we put down 6 trees in our forest, at the edge of our forest, to put in our house, and I could never have survived without the trees to cool the house during the summertime. Yeah. So I understand completely the importance of this, and environmentally, we have forest pockets on our timber pockets on our place that are one of those long-term investments. My grandchildren will be able to benefit from the next harvest because we had one 10 years ago, so that's how long it takes to get that regeneration to happen as a true renewable resource. We are also very fortunate that the Department of Forestry has both urban and rural forestry planting program now. There's complete cost, a zero cost to landowners to have forested buffers planted along our streams and also in open areas to try to expand the acreage which is going to be under forest canopy. That's active right now in Albemarle. The Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District also works with the federal government and the USDA programs to be able to bring cost share money to landowners who are willing to put in their stream buffers, for example, into 10-year contracts to keep them free of animals and plowing and that kind of thing.
Over the years, Albemarle County Comprehensive Plan has concentrated development in the growth areas along Route 29 near Pantops. Route 29 near Pantops and around Crozet and the urban ring around Charlottesville. What planning policies do you support to balance the needs of a growing population and management of infrastructure costs, providing affordable housing and protecting the environment?
All right. So
Small question.
Well, it was something that our predecessors did a really good job on, because in 1980, when the growth areas were established, the reason was to provide the most efficient and cost-effective way to the taxpayers to provide water and sewer and transportation and other issues, urban-type services, to our citizens. There's nothing more expensive than running a long sewer line out to a rural area with very few customers. That would be completely unaffordable. So this focusing of those services and therefore attracting higher density living in the growth areas was a really good idea. And it has since proven to be very successful. People come out to our farm in the country and they say, I wouldn't live out here for $1 million because it is remote and it's dark. There are animals out there. A lot of people love to live in neighborhoods and just look at Crozet and the fact that there is a stampede of people to move out there where there are a wide range of different housing sizes and lot sizes, from little bitty lots with little 800 and 1,000 square foot houses. People love those. They're selling faster than they can put plat to paper. And there are townhouses and all the different configurations because people see their ability to walk out and enjoy common green space and recreational abilities, jump in their car or jump on the transit, the free transit shuttle, to go downtown to participate in all sorts of fun things in downtown Crozet.
Let's talk more about that. Changing our patterns of transportation is necessary to reduce carbon emissions, but public transportation in the county extends north only to Sam's Club, south to Southwood, and east to Pantops, including the hospital, and nothing yet to the west in your district. What changes do you propose to make to the public transportation a viable alternative to single-occupant car travel?
Well, we have made some success in that, and I'm really excited to report some of them. This is the second year of the Regional Transit Authority, and there are now voting members of the County Board of Supervisors and City Council and the transit providers, such as Jaunt, and the university has been at the table, and I think their role will be increasing. So this will really improve the ability of the county to have a greater decision-making about where the transit routes will go, how they will be most effective, rather than just having CAT decide, we're going to put a bus here and here's the bill, which is where we've been for a number of years. There are several things which are coming forward very quickly. We have a new transit, a commuter service called the Crozet Connect that runs several buses all day long from Crozet down to the university and the hospital. And it, within a week, was two-thirds full. So there's tremendous demand for that.
Is that public or private?
It is pay for service. So okay. It is, Jaunt is doing it. The county did throw in money to get it started.
All right.
And then it will be part of the federal highway transportation allocation. There also is a commuter run from the Shenandoah Valley over to university and to this employment district in Charlottesville. And then the long-range buses that the state pays for. There's a new Virginia Breeze, which is coming from Danville straight through Charlottesville up to D.C. So things are happening, which are really exciting to me. And this free pilot of the autonomous shuttle that's been operating for 3 months in Crozet, everybody wants it to just keep on going because it's so well-received.
You have an autonomous shuttle?
Yes, Perone.
A driverless shuttle in
Crozet?
Well,
there is an ambassador in the car to make everybody feel comfortable. But he or she is more like a tour guide saying, well, if you want to get a haircut, here's the place. And if you want to get your beer, it's right over here.
That's a great job.
It has been answering all sorts of federal highway safety questions. This has been an operating project for the last 3 months, now, run by Perone. Go ahead.
In 2017, that was a year of turmoil, and it revealed the urgent need to address longstanding problems and the deep emotions behind those problems. And the recent conflicts over wearing Confederate symbols in schools illustrate the intensity of feelings on those key issues. What do you see can be done to help build respect, confidence in the process, and good order in the relations between the Board of Supervisors and the public?
I am very happy to say that the Board of Supervisors has been very careful over the last 12 years and long before as well to ensure that our public meetings are a safe place for people of all views to speak. And we demand that our citizenry participate in a respectful way in that they are not allowed to disrupt others. And several times when I was chair, four times particularly, someone had to be removed because they could not comply with our rules of no disruption and had to listen to the rest of the meeting from across the hall. And every time after the one person with uproar was escorted out, the rest of the meeting went fine. And then it happened four meetings altogether. And then things have quieted down since then. People stopped me in the grocery store for months afterwards and said, thank you so much for reining in the disruption, because I would never come to a meeting if I thought people were going to shout at me and demean me for the fact that they didn't agree with what I was saying. So I see no reason to change. I think we have had great success. We are welcoming, we are respectful, and we expect the same from our citizenry when they come to talk to us.
It takes four supervisors. There are six supervisors on the board, which means four supervisors have to vote yes to take any action. What does it take for the Board of Supervisors to get things done?
You would be surprised at two things. One, that we get things done even when there's a possibility of a split board. And two, that there's so much disagreement among the six people on the board. People accuse us of being all the same, but if you would ever stick it out for the 9 hours of a meeting, you would realize that the reason the meeting is 9 hours is because we're arguing about things a lot. There are six different perspectives about many many different items. The reason that many of the votes are a strong majority, I've gone down in flames numerous times and had to vote against things and lost 1-5 or 2-4 sometimes, is because our zoning and our legislative actions are based upon the adopted ordinances which govern our decisions. These ordinances were adopted by public hearing and have the support of the citizenry. So there's much of our work that is prescribed in a way. It has a process. If their answers are given that are appropriate to the questions which are shown, then it should be approved. And if a project does not have enough support to draw a fourth person, even from a split board, as we had in 2010 to 2014, then it shouldn't go forward. So I don't have a problem personally with the six. I think it's actually ideal for that reason, that you have to have a really balanced project in order to get support. There are many times when I have lost on a project that failed on a 3-3, and there are times when projects I have not supported have stopped on a 3-3. So I see the benefits, 3-3 being a no.
Were you on the board when they tried to put that midnight run of the bypass through?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
June 6th of 2011. The meeting went for 6 hours, and that was before we even got to the bypass part at 11:30 at night.
Well, everyone went home, and then they had a... That was, in my view, how not to run government.
Well, you had to change the rules, three different stages of the rules at 11:30 at night by a 4-2 vote in order to carry that out.
And you were the supervisor of the district most affected by that midnight run.
No, actually, Jack Jewett and Raya would have been the most.
Okay.
It did not come through the Whitehall district.
But did those supervisors that were they aware that this was happening? Or was it just...
The Jack Jewett district supervisor voted against it, and the Rio district supervisor voted for it because he thought it was a grand idea.
I'm sure.
A grand idea that never came to fruition, and we have all the other things done.
Well, now by the Department that was the fifth time that particular plan had risen from the ashes. But at least at the end of that one, we got a really wonderful product, which was all those parallel roads and bridges and other things that had been in our plan for 20 years and been funded often, and then the money taken away by some politician who wanted to do something in some other part of the state. So that did have a happy ending, I'm glad to say.
Excellent.
Now, you represent the Whitehall District, which is the only magisterial district in the county that doesn't reach the urban ring of Charlottesville.
Right.
What particular needs do the people in Whitehall have that the county should address?
Well, we have to remember that we have a very large growth area in the middle of the Whitehall District, which is the dense area of Crozet. So it has an urban population very similar to the urban populations in Pantops or any of the other ones around the donut. So I will say that we have all the same urban issues out there of traffic, school crowding, infrastructure needs, sidewalks that everybody has in the urban ring, very similar. But in the rural part of the Whitehall District, the largest concern among residents throughout has been traffic safety, speeding enforcement, dangerous intersections, and it's impossible for our police department, even with its 12 new officers and higher numbers than we used to have in 2008, to be everywhere all the time. Our drivers are inconsiderate to a large degree and willing to do just about anything to get where they need to go. So those are really big concerns. We are making significant progress on an intersection in the Earliesville area where it's had lots of attention, lots of accidents in the last year, including one just last week. And there is sort of week-to-week updates on plans and engineering and cost allocations or cost projections for improvements for that intersection. So I think that the rural residents see police officers now and then. That is really that, and the schools are the services which they perceive to be real, but they don't see them enough to really consider that to be enough for them, especially when people are zooming through the villages at 60 miles an hour.
All right, so you walk up to my door, you knock on my door, you say, Jeff, I'm running for Board of Supervisors. In your one-minute speech, you got me for 1 minute, what do you say?
That I will listen to you. that I will represent all of the voters of the district, not just the ones who vote for me. All of the constituents is different. People who disagree with me still deserve representation. And I do listen carefully to all views to try to find a workable solution where everybody is a little bit miserable. I believe in public safety and have supported for 12 years increasing the budget for the police department to increase the staff for community policing. Community policing has been widely rejoiced and welcomed in both the rural areas and the growth area of Crozet. And that we have equitable access for all of our community members for education, for job opportunities, and for quality of life. The things that I pledge are to work on. Regulation is not a dirty word. Regulation is the rules that are adopted by our community at large through the public hearing process to provide the glue that holds everybody together. It's to provide equal opportunity and protection for one person's property rights versus another who wants to do some commercial activity on their property. And these are really important elements that should not be ignored or ridiculed.
You wouldn't want a guy opening a hog farm in downtown Crozet on the 2 acres he happens to own. Hey, are they going to get a roundabout out there on 250?
There are two roundabouts in the budget.
Okay.
In 2022, the one at the trestle is supposed
nice.
To, and the other one is at 151 and 250.
Outstanding. Bob, I think you have one more question. Oh, it's my question. All right, how do we reach you? If let's say we want to volunteer, we want to donate money, how do we get in touch with the Ann Malik campaign?
Well, the email is info@annmalikforsupervisor.com, and the county office has my cell phone number, and people can always call me on my cell number. And my website has all sorts of information about issues and how to get involved, and we would love the support of all of our Whitehall residents. Many different ways you can be involved in the campaign, and I hope that you will come out and see me. I have 15 different pop-up conversations all around the district where I'm standing on the street corner with my A-frame sign saying, meet Ann here today from 5 to 6 p.m. In hopes
idea.
That people will come on their way home from work, will just peel off into the parking lot and jump out of their car and come talk
sure.
to me.
Well,
yes.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Ann, thank you so much for spending this hour with our WPVC listeners. This is one of our series of election special interviews with candidates running for Albemarle County Board of Supervisor in the November 5th election, 28 days away, I think. Each of the interviews will be available on podcast from our website, 947wpvc.org, after they've long been broadcast. And thank you, Ann Malik, for giving us your time so you, our listeners, can make the best choice for county supervisor. Next Monday, it's Steve Harvey, Republican candidate supervisor from Whitehall, will be in studio. All right, Monday afternoon roundtable. Ann, thanks so much.
You're so welcome.
Roundtable coming up.